You're listening to the Nachum Segal Network. My name is Nachum Segal, and this is By the Book, brought to you by Curran Publishers. We get an opportunity each week to explore the world of amazing Jewish literary works here on the Nachum Segal Network, and this week is no exception. By the Book this week pays careful attention to the Koren Talmud Bavli. Shkolim has just been released with commentary by Rabbi Adin Evan Yisrael Steinsaltz. And you can go to the web, korenpub.com, korenpub.com, for all the information about all the different works. And with us is Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weinrib. Rabbi Weinrib is editor-in-chief of the Koren Talmud Bavli Project. No one better to discuss this work than with him, and he joins us via telephone on this edition of By the Book. Rabbi Weinrib, welcome back to the Nachum Segal Network.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
I appreciate that, and there's so much to discuss, and there are a lot of people who have heard of Steinsaltz. I mean it as a brand name, God forbid not to be disrespectful in terms of using the rabbi's last name in reference to him. Some of our listeners are familiar with the Talmud Bavli. Many are familiar with the attempt and the work involved in taking the Aramaic and bringing it first into Hebrew, now, of course, into English. I guess it's best for us to start from the beginning. When did Rabbi Steinsaltz decide, and how did he decide? What was the method of decision that he would go ahead and create what we know as the Steinsaltz edition of the Talmud, first translating it into Hebrew?
Well, Rabbi Steinsaltz, as I think your listeners know, is a person who is committed now and has been committed through all of his adult life to spreading Torah to the wider public, to making even complex and in some cases mystical works of Torah understandable, comprehensible to everyone, anyone who's serious about study. He did that in his translation and commentary on the Tanya, which is a Hasidic mystical work, and he did it in what is really his masterwork, which took him the better part of 45 years to translate the entire Talmud from the Aramaic original into a modern Hebrew to which any reader of Hebrew, mostly people in Israel, could read and understand.
And all of that, that first initial project, the procedure, the fact that it was released, all of it got met with very interesting reaction at that period of time.
Yes, it did, and it's fascinating because some of that reaction was aimed at people who disagreed with the very idea of making the Talmud accessible to the public. They said the Talmud was something for scholars, it was something for people who were committed to a lifetime of study, and popularizing it would not be proper. That was 45 years ago. Today, there are numerous translations of the Talmud into Hebrew, into English, and into a variety of other languages, and translation of most holy works are now available, so that opposition has kind of gone by the wayside.
So therefore, we say he was ahead of his time, we say he was a revolutionary, we say both. How does he fit into the context of the fact, what you just alluded to, that essentially everything is available in English today?
Well, he certainly was a pioneer, maybe even a prophet, but certainly a pioneer, and he was ahead of his time. I personally became acquainted with Rabbi Steinsaltz many, many years ago when he visited the greater Washington, D.C. Area at the time that I was living in Silver Spring, Maryland. And I followed him around the town, literally, because he was speaking to all kinds of people, observant Jews and non-observant Jews, highly educated Jews and people who just were simply interested in his charisma, and even in many instances to Gentiles, to people in the government, people in the intelligentsia, etc. And he has had then and has now a way of speaking to everyone and reaching the minds and the hearts of everyone with whom he comes into contact.
All right, Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weinrib is with us, editor-in-chief of the Koren Talmud Bavli Project. If we go back for a moment again, just to give background to the Hebrew Steinsaltz Gemara, as it was commonly known, as it continues to be commonly known. Not every tractate was translated into Hebrew. Is that right?
No, every tractate of the Babylonian Talmud was translated into Hebrew. It took him the better part of 45 years, but he translated every tractate of the Babylonian Talmud. However, the Koren Talmud Bavli project, Talmud Bavli, of course, means Babylonian Talmud, is aiming at many audiences, but one audience is that those many people, thousands of people who study Daf Yomi, who study the program by which you study one page a day, one folio a day of the Babylonian Talmud. Interestingly enough, in that course of study, there are also volumes which are not in the Babylonian Talmud, but which are in the what's technically known as the Palestinian Talmud or the Jerusalem Talmud, the Talmud Yerushalmi. In just a matter of days, those many thousands of people across the world who study Daf Yomi a page a day will be studying the tractate known as Shekalim. Shekalim is the plural of the word shekel, right, which we know is a denomination, a coin. And that has no Babylonian Talmud, but only a Jerusalem Talmud, but it is incorporated in the curriculum of the Daf Yomi. And so we decided, together with Rav Steinsaltz, we being the people at Koren, decided to translate that too, which is just translated in the past year or so by Rabbi Steinsaltz and the team. And that's why Koren Talmud Bavli is really a bit of a misnomer, because it does include at least one tractate, which is not Bavli, not Babylonian, but the Jerusalem Talmud.
All right, so not to get too technical, but it's worth clearing up. So therefore, those who finish Maseches Pesachim will be moving on to Shkolim.
Correct.
All right, and therefore, they'll have an opportunity to use the Talmud Bavli, or I should say current Talmud Bavli Shkolim, even though, again, like you said, it may be a drop of a misnomer because it's dealing with the Masechta of Shkolim. They'll be able to use it for their own education during the course of study of Daf Yomi. Is there another good example of that? Are there other Masechtas in Seder Moed or other Masechtas that are well known that we may have thought are so well known that they're in Talmud Bavli when in reality they are in the Jerusalem Talmud?
To my knowledge, the Daf Yomi, the only exception is Masechet Shkolim.
And that is it.
And that's it. The rest of it is pure, unadulterated Talmud Bavli. And again, this is something that the Koren is doing because we promised that the Koren Talmud Bavli would be a tool to anyone who wanted to study Talmud, to the beginner as well as to the advanced student, to the person who studied a page a month, as well as to the person who studies a page a day.
Right, and even though there was a translation of Shkolim by Rabbi Steinsaltz, this would be the first time in both Hebrew and English that a commentary of Rabbi Steinsaltz is available.
Correct.
All right, there you go. So that was the point I was trying to make. I used the word translation. That was incorrect. It's actually his commentary that is brand new in both Hebrew and English. Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch-Weinrib with us live via telephone, editor-in-chief of the Koren Talmud Bavli Project. All right, Rabbi Weinrib, if Shkolim is really part of the Jerusalem Talmud, are there obvious differences? Is it a very different read for those who have been studying the Talmud Bavli up until this point, especially those who are immersed every single day with Daf Yomi? Are there obvious differences that they will pick up as soon as they open Maseches Shkolim?
Yes. I personally was privileged to teach almost three complete cycles of Daf Yomi in my former synagogue in Baltimore and other places. And I very clearly remember when, as a teacher, I first had to teach the tractate of Shekalim. The Jerusalem Talmud is less frequently studied than the Babylonian Talmud. There are less commentaries. There is no commentary by Rashi on the Jerusalem Talmud. And, of course, that's a big gap, a big handicap for anyone who's studying. And so we have often variant readings of the text that's not always clear. The language is different. It's Aramaic, but it's a Jerusalem, a Palestinian Aramaic, as opposed to a Babylonian Aramaic. There are some sages mentioned in the Jerusalem Talmud who are not mentioned in the Babylonian Talmud, and vice versa. And there are various ways to deal with that, but it does present certain difficulties. The style of the Jerusalem Talmud is very different. It's not as the Babylonian Talmud, usually every passage is organized into steps, a Hava Amina or an original thought, and then a discussion, and then a conclusion. In the Jerusalem Talmud, often there is no conclusion, and you're left hanging, and you wonder, hey, do I understand this correctly? But sometimes, deliberately, questions are left wide open, and many, many other differences. So that presents a difficulty. The good news, so to speak, is that there are only 21 pages in the Jerusalem Talmud, the Vilna edition of the Jerusalem Talmud for Masechet Shkolim. So it's really just 3 weeks that you have to struggle with this new type of text. What I found, interestingly enough, is that once people who are accustomed to studying Daf Yomi Babylonian Talmud come across this tractate, which is Jerusalem Talmud, they become intrigued by the fact that the Jerusalem Talmud is so different, and then they undertake separately to study the Jerusalem Talmud on their own. So that nowadays, you can go to many synagogues which actually have the equivalent of a Daf Yomi for the Jerusalem Talmud.
So it's really an amazing bridge when you think about it. Without Shkolim, there are people who had never discovered the fact that the Jerusalem Talmud exists and that it's doable as a course of study and that they can get through it.
Exactly. That's very true. And there's so much that's different about a Jerusalem Talmud tractate, and Shkolim being the best example because we're all about, all of us who studied Daf Yomi are about to begin it in a few days, that it just opens up entirely new areas of study. One thing, for example, is that the Vilna Gaon, the late 18th century Abelio of Vilna, focused very much on the Jerusalem Talmud, and one of his students composed a commentary, Taklin Chadatin, which incorporates the Vilna Gaon's reading of the Jerusalem Talmud's Shkolim, so that he kind of fixes the text from his point of view. And it's different from the way other Acharonim, other 18th century scholars have understood it. And what we've tried to do is to emphasize the Vilna Gaon's approach, but still not neglect the approach of some of his predecessors who had a different approach to analyzing the text. But this whole notion of having variant readings to a text and having to establish the correct reading is something which, when you study Talmud Bavli, by and large, you don't have that type of difficulty.
Understood. Rabbi Weinreb, just back to the other point for a moment. We joke, I mean, half-jokingly, about, you know, when people, God forbid, have to drop out or feel the need to end their pursuit of one Talmud page per day. Based on what you're saying, as different and as difficult maybe in some ways Shkolim is, it generally would not be the cause of somebody giving up the course of study.
Well, I don't think so. First of all, because it's relatively brief compared to other tractates, number one. Number two, it's inherently interesting. The topics are interesting. It begins, of course, with a discussion of the mitzvah of bringing a half shekel to help fund the public sacrifices that were brought in the temple every day. And then, of course, as is the true of any volume of Talmud, it goes off into other areas. But it discusses areas of halacha, after areas of custom, areas of tradition that are very interesting in and of themselves. And also, the Jerusalem Talmud is, as is the Babylonian Talmud, has many sections which are agada rather than halacha, which are legend, history, even poetry, which have an interest of their own and are fascinating. And because it's in the Jerusalem Talmud, many people have never heard some of these Ma'amari Chazal, some of these teachings, which are not halachic, but kind of give a broader view of Jewish life and Jewish practice in general.
Koren Talmud Bavli is a project that has relatively just begun. Are they in the middle of it? This is volume 1, volume 10. What can you tell us about the course of releasing the volumes of Talmud Bavli at Koren?
Okay, well, first of all, Koren Talmud Bavli is a project which is undertaking to translate Rabbi Steinsaltz's Hebrew translation into English,
right,
as well as all of Rabbi Steinsaltz's commentaries, marginal notes, supplementary explanations, etc. It's all being translated into English. Doing that is a great effort. We have an entire team of translators, editors, copy editors, scholars of all types with all sorts of backgrounds who are part of that team. So it's a big project. We are committed to keeping up with the Talmud, with a Daf Yomi calendar, and being ready with a new tractate a good few weeks in advance of when the public begins to study that tractate in the Daf Yomi curriculum. Now, what we found is that certain tractates, three of the four that we've already done, required, because of the volume, had to be published in two volumes.
Wow.
So we have one volume for Brachot, two volumes for Shabbat, two volumes for Erevin, two volumes for Psochim, and now one volume for Shkolim. So Shkolim is our eighth volume, although it's really only our fourth tractate.
And as the Daf Yomi one page per day course of study continues, the goal is to just keep releasing the volumes.
Correct. That, by the way, Shkolim is our fifth volume. Fifth tractate. Brachot, Shabbat, Erevin, Psochim, and Shkolim. Yes, you're correct.
Why is Rabbi Steinsaltz now known as Rabbi Adin Evan Yisrael Steinsaltz?
I'm not entirely sure, but I imagine because he's really part of the Israeli scene, he wanted to Hebraicize his name. I remember hearing that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, suggested to him that he change his name from Steinsaltz to Evan Yisrael. I may be wrong about that, but Rabbi Steinsaltz is a Chabad Chassid. I was very close to the Rebbe, and perhaps that story is true. I'm not sure. But in Israel, he's increasingly known as Evan Yisrael, although I think that he'll never be able to shake the name Steinsaltz. It's so famous. It's really a household word in Jewish Talmudic literature, as well as in all areas of Jewish study, so that he'll be known, I think, throughout history as Rabbi Steinsaltz, and maybe in parentheses, Evan Yisrael Steinsaltz.
And as I said earlier, that's why I don't think using the word Steinsaltz is at all disrespectful, because it's essentially a brand name at this point, in addition to being his name.
Yeah, and let me tell you something. I've known Rabbi Steinsaltz for many, many years, but I've become very close to him as we collaborate in this particular work. And believe me, he's the person most likely to forgive you for just calling him Steinsaltz.
No question about it. I remember his visit to our studio in the morning, a day I'll never forget, and I wish I could remember his response to what I thought was one of my best questions of my career, and I've been around a while. I asked him what his favorite Gemara was. I asked him what his favorite section of Talmud was. And again, one day I will actually check the archives and see what his response was. But he took that question very seriously. You'd think someone like him would not be able to identify a favorite or even analyze, you know, one over the other. But he had, I remember, a quite a potent answer to that question.
Well, I'm not sure which visit of his to your studio you're referring to, but there was one visit about a year ago that I accompanied him.
Correct.
On that visit. I was with him on the show. I don't recall his answer to that question. I do recall the question.
Oh, you do recall the question. So you're like me. We have to both check the archives.
I do recall the question. I don't recall the answer, but I bet you that if you would ask him that question today, he'd give you a different answer.
Very interesting. His commentary includes so much about language and personalities and halacha, and of course notes, so many different notes on Gemaras, on passages of the Talmud as you go through it. We should note that every one of these English passages, or every one of these English translations, these are from his original notes and commentaries, correct? If there was a paragraph analyzing a personality, it was he who decided to analyze that personality at that page of the Talmud.
Yes, that's true. However, in the English translation, since we have the advantage, some of these commentaries he worked on 40 plus years ago.
Right.
And we, of course, now have access to new material or newly accessible material. For example, in many of the illustrations, So he had someone, for example, a shekel. Mm-hmm. He had someone draw a sketch of what a shekel looked like. However, we have access now by going online and through the web, getting actual full-color photographs of a shekel,
right.
of a real shekel from some museum. And we get permission from the museum. We credit the museum in the back of the book. And the illustration, of course, is quite different from his. And the same thing is true with textual material. Sometimes we've been able to expand and to enhance some of his commentaries. First of all, because with time we have access to the libraries, to manuscripts, to books which simply weren't available decades ago. And in some cases, it's just the expertise of our team that has been able to do that. So sometimes you will find that a note that he wrote is now twice the size in English as it was in Hebrew. And it's not just because of the translation. It's because we found new material, more interesting material, more detailed material, more interesting material than he was able to find given the conditions under which he began.
And if someone were just to look at the illustrations, if someone were just to look at the images, the maps, the insects, the scullum, you can go through an entire, if you were just to analyze those, you'd learn a tremendous amount from
yes.
this volume.
Yeah, and as I said, the current Talmud Bavli is aiming at a much broader audience than Daf Yomi. We're aiming at people who have varied interests, who have limited background or different kinds of backgrounds than the typical yeshiva student. And there are many people who, for example, are just interested in what's called the flora and the fauna of ancient Jewry, the flowers, the plants, the animals that populate the Talmud. For them, it's not only the photographs that are interesting, but it's the written material, the Latin names of some of the herbs and medicinal herbs that are mentioned in the Talmud, the Latin names of the various animals that are mentioned in the Talmud, some background about them, where they were found, where they are today. Some of them are extinct. Etc. So that's something that many people find fascinating, and it's not the typical interest of a typical yeshiva bocher, but it's certainly interesting to many, many thousands of people who now have access to this kind of material.
Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Hirsch-Weinrib with us via telephone. You're listening to Buy the Book. This is the Nachum Segal Network. Koren Publishers brings you this segment each and every week to encourage everybody to go and add to their library some amazing works. In this case, the Talmud Bavli Project is in full swing, the Koren Talmud Bavli Project, and the Shkolim, which begins Daf Yomi, by the way, on the 20th of October. I know Rabbi Weinrib just mentioned that the audience for this is even way beyond those who just study Daf Yomi, but calendarically, it's good to mention the 20th of October, Shkolim will begin in Daf Yomi. Commentary by Rabbi Adin Evin Yisrael Steinsaltz is available in English with amazing photographs, really incredible commentary, and all done in English. If you go to korenpub.com, you will enjoy all of the Koren works that are featured there, including all the different Talmud Bavli works that have been released up until this point. Plus, you could sign up for their email list, join them on Facebook, etc. Plus, find out how you can purchase their books at local bookstores and through the web. But now we're talking about the Talmud, and with Shkolim coming up, you may want to consider it very strongly so it will enhance your Talmud study. KorenPub.com for information, KorenPub.com for information. Rabbi Weinrib, one of the things that I remember as a kid growing up was hearing how Rabbi Steinsaltz, I hope I'm right about this, because obviously there is a unique aspect to the page of Talmud in a Steinsaltz Gemara, correct? There is something unique about it, different than what we know as the regular Talmud Bavli format. Would that be an accurate way of saying it?
Well, that has an easy question, but it has a complicated answer.
Okay.
When Rabbi Steinsaltz, those of the audience who are familiar at all with what a page of Babylonian Talmud looks like classically are familiar with the page, the way it was printed in Vilna about 130 years ago.
Right.
About the year 1880 or so. That page has become the model page for almost all subsequent editions of the Talmud. Now, publication has come to go back way back, but from 1880 on, that became pretty standard, the Vilna page.
Right.
When Rabbi Steinsaltz first translated the Talmud into Hebrew, that first edition did not follow the format, the layout of the Vilna page. He broke it down in a different way. First of all, he put nekudot, he put the vowels under all the letters. The Vilna Shas, at least the classical Vilna Shas, is not vowelized and not punctuated. There's no commas, periods, question marks, or anything like that. He put all of that in his edition, but he did not follow the Vilna page. He was criticized for that because many people felt the Vilna page was traditional and he was kind of being a little non-traditional. He felt that there was nothing sacred to the format of the page. What was important is that the student be able to understand what he's presented with. Then Rabbi Steinsaltz published another edition of his Hebrew translation, which did have the Vilna page, and on an accompanying page had his translation and commentaries. In the current Talmud Bavli, we're translating it to English. We've solved that dilemma in a very interesting way. If you open any volume of the Koran Talmud Bavli from right to left, the way you would open a Hebrew book,
right,
you will find the Vilna page, a complete Vilna page, just as it is in any other standard Talmud Bavli. However, it will be fully punctuated and vowelized.
Mm.
So not only the Gemara, but the Rashi too.
Right.
It will have the Nekudot, or A'eh Bo Ba'beh, and will also have punctuation marks, commas, semicolons, colons, question marks, exclamation marks, etc., which make reading it so much easier. The Tosfos, by the way, is not vowelized, but is punctuated.
Mm.
So that makes it much easier. However, if you open the volume from the left to right, as you would open an English book, then you find an entirely different picture in front of you. It's an entirely different visual experience. You don't see the Vilna page. Instead, you see a page with separate paragraphs, with the most complex passages of the Talmud broken down into what I call bite-sized pieces, two or three lines.
But nothing's missing, correct?
Nothing's missing.
Right.
Everything's there. In fact, there's more there than in many editions of the Talmud Bavli and many translations, because we deliberately reinserted, as Rav Steinsaltz did in his Hebrew translation, we in our English translation have all of the censored passages of the Talmud restored. Now, for your audience, over the centuries, the Catholic Church and others saw fit to censor parts of our Holy Talmud and took out entire paragraphs because they felt it alluded to Jesus in a negative way or alluded to non-Jews in a negative way, and so they forcibly removed some of that from the Talmud.
Do you alert the reader that
this
is a passage that's included even though in other editions it would not have been?
Right, well, we're alerting the reader right now on this program.
Yeah, I mean on the page.
But we do so in all of our material, all of our publicity, and also on the page, the attention of the reader is drawn either in the translation itself or in the commentary to the fact that you won't find this in the standard Vilna edition, you won't find this in certain other translations, but we've restored it and we've done so, for very good reason. And often those particular censored paragraphs require explanation,
right,
extra explication. You have to know what they're referring to, the references to the New Testament, the references to Greek mythology, the references to people who were perhaps the apostles of Jesus. Who knows? There's all sorts of material there that is now commented upon, so that you get a sense of why they were censored in the first place, what were the thinking of some of our non-Jewish friends for censoring it in the first place, and why it's being restored, and the special significance that it has now to really have what I call the authentic version of the Talmud Bavli, with nothing missing, nothing uncensored.
Just fascinating. That's fantastic. And I'm sure that your readers, those who've been able to explore this in previous track dates, have been very appreciative for it.
Yes, and some of the tractates that we've done already, from Masechet Shabbat, for example, Shabbos, does have some references there that were censored and are restored in the current Talmud Bavli in a beautiful English translation with marginal notes explaining what some of the issues are or might have been.
All right, Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, editor-in-chief of the current Talmud Bavli Project. Let me take advantage of the fact that you were offered to us for this conversation by Weinreb while I have you. Where we normally see Rashi and Tosfos as those, you know, for those who have grown up with a familiarity with the Talmud Bavli, what does Masechet Shkalim offer al Hadaf? What does Masechet Shkalim offer in addition to the Gemara, in this case Talmud Yerushalmi, in terms of commentators on the page?
Okay, so the standard version of Yerushalmi, which is also published in Vilna, has two commentaries that are pretty much consistent throughout all the Yerushalmi, and they're called the Korban Ho'eda and the Pnei Moshe, and they were written by 18th century rabbinic scholars prior to the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon lived at the very end of the 18th century. The authors of those works lived at the beginning of the 18th century. Those are the two most common works. However, I mentioned that on Masechet Shkolim, we also have this commentary of a very close student of the Vilna Gaon. His name was Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov, and he the name of his work is Aramaic, Taklin Chadatin, which in Hebrew translates as Shekalim Chadashim, or new Shekalim, new coins. It's just kind of an allusion to the fact that his is a new, a relatively new commentary, early 19th century in his case. And there are other marginal commentaries that can be found on the page. But what people generally do, certainly when they're studying, my advice at least as a teacher would be, if you're studying Shkolin for the first time, you want to pick one of those commentaries and run with it. Because if you try to master what the various commentaries are saying, especially because there are variant readings about what the text even says, let alone what it means, it can become quite confusing, certainly the first time around. What Rav Steinsaltz and the team tried to do in the translation and commentary into English is really to focus very much on using the Vilna Gaon's approach. However, we're careful always to supplement it with an additional comment or two when he is saying something that's startlingly different from what the other more the earlier commentaries are saying.
So and that could be. And is that very common?
That's very common. Yeah, that's very common.
So the Vilna Gaon tends, many decades later, it's not uncommon that he will be much different than the commentaries.
Right. The Vilna Gaon, in a certain way, was a revolutionary.
Right.
He had an approach which obviously was based upon his magisterial command of all Talmudic literature, and he wasn't. He wasn't hesitant about saying sometimes, no, the text is wrong. It's a wrong reading. And we have that even in the Babylonian Talmud. You're familiar on some pages. You'll have a Hagos Hagro,
sure,
the notes of the Gaon ben Eliyahu, which simply say, no, these words are wrong. Cross them out. Tof Aleph Mem. Tevot Elu Mechukim. These have to be erased. So for that, of course, it takes someone of the stature of the Vilna Gaon to do that. But when we're approaching Shkolim, certainly for a first, for a student just beginning, it's often best not even to trouble oneself with why the Gaon would change it, but simply to understand what the Gaon is trying to say, and maybe on the second or third time around to get into the nuances and to the differences of opinion about those readings.
Here we are at the Nachum Segal Network. The program is called By the Book, Magid Books. Daring, scholarly, faithful, Magid Books, a division of Koren Publishers of Jerusalem. Go to korenpub.com. And, of course, Koren, in addition to Magid, has its, or I should say Magid, in addition to Koren, has its own imprint. But the Koren Talmud Bavli is our focus today as we discuss it with their editor-in-chief of the Koren Talmud Bavli Project, by Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb. The tractate of Shkolim, which begins in the Daf Yomi cycle on the 20th of October, has a commentary by Rabbi Adin Evin Yisrael Steinsaltz, and amazing illustrations, really incredible material. If you've been following along over the last half hour or so, then you've heard some of the incredible things that are included. I want to ask you about the scholarship that goes into this work of I Wonder, but first, there's an introduction to Shkolem, which begins with the words, Tractate Shkolem deals primarily with the finances and organization of the temple. I assume that this is the Masechta that deals with the day-to-day of the Beis HaMikdash from a financial standpoint, from a business standpoint, if I could use that that expression, more than any other.
Yes, that's of course the focus of Masechet Shkolem. As you know, most general topics that are interesting to the student are not confined to any one tractate.
Right.
But they're disseminated throughout the Talmud. That's true of almost any topic you can imagine. When something is as widespread and as general an issue as the finances of the Holy Temple, since the Talmud Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, deals in great detail about the Holy Temple. One of the things every student of Talmud soon discovers is that the temple is what it's all about, right. Even though it's been destroyed now almost for 2,000 years. But almost every page of the Talmud, there is some reference and some connection to the Talmud. You can find that even in tractates like Bava Kamma, which deal with civil law. But still, there's a connection to the temple. As far as the finance of the temple, that's scattered throughout the Talmud Bavli. In Maseches Ketuvos, you have subjects about it. Maseches Me'ilah, of course, etc. But Shkolem focuses on the question of how was the money raised? The Holy Temple, the Beit HaMikdash, was an expensive proposition, right?
they needed a lot of Shkolem.
it was a big building. It needed maintenance, right? It needed plumbing. It needed carpentry. It needed architects. It needed masonry, et cetera, et cetera. Just the Eitzim V'Avanim, just the sticks and stones of the temple required a lot of work. Where did those funds come from? And what about the funds for the Karbanot, for the sacrifices which were brought every single day, several times a day, and in some days of the year, many times. And these had to be funded, by law, by halakhic law, by the community as a whole, by the tzibur. Well, how was that money collected? Where was that money kept? What did you do if you had a surplus? If you had a deficit? All of these questions are discussed in the Tractate of Shkolem.
If I may just quickly run through what you have here on page 3, just so people get a perspective of what you mean in terms of these financial issues. Chapter 1 summarizes halachas and customs in the month of Adar. We know, of course, that that's the month that Shkolem are actually collected, right? That's the month that they are donated. Right. Chapter 2 discusses transportation of the shekels to the temple. The cash needs a method to get to the temple, right?
Right.
Chapter 3 focuses on the withdrawal of funds from the chamber in which they're stored in order to transfer them to the treasurers and functionaries in charge of the various temple activities. 4 deals with the use of coins withdrawn from the temple treasury chamber. 5 centers on the organizational arrangement of the temple staff, particularly special functionaries appointed for each task. 6 deals with the collection baskets that were in the temple, 13 in total, meaning that year-round on a regular basis someone could contribute, right?
Right, sure.
Chapter 7 concerns the resolution of doubts that arise when different treasury funds are combined. How should the money be used? By the way, not very different from troubles, or I should say concerns, that we have in different Jewish organizations nowadays.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
Especially those that end up folding after many years, right?
Yes, indeed.
And Chapter 8 continues from where the previous one left off and discusses halachic issues in cases of uncertainty, whether a found substance is ritually pure or impure. The tractate concludes with a discussion of the methods of ritual purification of the temple vessels, which, of course, I guess had to be paid for as well at some point. Am I right, Rabbi Weinreb?
Yes, indeed. what you've just done, actually, is you've used the introductory material that Rabbi Steinsaltz wrote that we translated.
Unbelievable.
Which is a way of organizing it and just a few sentences putting and condensing, obviously simplifying, but simplify for a good reason, all of the complexities of what was a very well-run bureaucracy.
And do we know, budget-wise, what was the most expensive aspect of upkeeping the temple? Do we know that based on the Talmud?
That's a good question. I can't answer that, but I bet you others could, and Rabbi Steinsaltz probably could.
And also, I'm sure there are certain vessels and possibly even procedures that some people thought cost next to nothing, which are really a fortune, and others that we would conjecture cost a tremendous amount that really, you know, we got away with murder in terms of what the cost was. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. And one of the fascinating aspects of Masechet Shkalim, and these are passages in other tractates as well, is how you avoided, even then, even in the Holy Temple, there were dishonest men who tried to steal some of the money or sneak some of it out, etc., or misuse it, and these various safeguards that were implemented in order to protect against that type of thievery is also a fascinating part of the tractate.
I let a few friends of mine who are fascinated by Rabbi Steinsaltz know that you'd be with me during this segment. Then they asked if I could toss in a couple of questions. So if you don't mind, I'll give it a shot here. I hope I have this one with the intent of the writer correct. How does interpreting Steinsaltz differ from interpreting actual Talmudic texts? In other words, if you're obviously actual Talmudic texts, we go to the great extents to be as exact as possible, as, you know, to get into the minds of people who were, you know, who were responsible for these words, you know, hundreds and thousands of years ago. When it comes to interpreting or translating somebody who, thank God, is around, whose scholarship is still appreciated, and who wrote these words rather recently, is it a different approach to translating?
Yeah, it's definitely a different approach. And in some cases, many cases probably, we've taken liberty with the original text for a variety of reasons. One just has to do with translating from any one language into another. When you're translating from Hebrew into English, you're going to have to change some of the expressions, some of the sequence of a sentence, etc., in the interest of clarity. Our major goal in the translation from Rabbi Steinsaltz's Hebrew into our English has been clarity, comprehensibility, making sure that people can read it and understand it, that the English is absolutely crystal clear, even for the most complex passages. There are certain cases where Rabbi Steinsaltz in the Hebrew translation could assume that his audience would simply know the meaning of the Hebrew word that he was using. One example.
And you cannot rely on that, obviously.
We couldn't rely on that, and we had to find an English way to convey that. One interesting example that comes to mind is the expression kesiv and kari. In the biblical text, there often are words which are spelled one way and pronounced the other way,
right,
another way. And this sometimes becomes very, very important in a passage in Talmud. Rabbi Steinsaltz did assume, that in Hebrew, his Hebrew readers would know what kesiv means and what kari means.
Right.
However, when you translate that into English, we have to take a sentence or two to explain to the audience what kesiv means and what kari means. So these types of things. So the English is never a literal, exact translation of Rabbi Steinsaltz.
And I guess this is overstating the obvious, but I'm just curious. He would never oversee your translation, correct? Meaning that when it comes to English, he knows he has a team he can rely on. Rabbi Weinrib.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. Okay, go ahead.
What I was saying was that Rabbi Steinsaltz, I think this is overstating the obvious, but he knows he has a good team he can rely on when it comes to English. He knows that he would not have any input when it comes to the final English word that is used in the translation.
No, he has absolute trust. The team is an outstanding group of people, some of whom have worked with Rabbi Steinsaltz and his institutions for quite some time. Some are what we call Koren people. But these are people that he and all of us really rely upon. I really should mention the names,
sure,
of some of those people who really deserve all the credit. I mean, my title, Editor-in-Chief, is a little bit undeserved because it's not precisely what I do. I kind of oversee and advise. But the people on the ground who are really doing the work, it's headed by a very fine scholar, American who's living in Israel for many, many years, Rabbi Joshua Schreier. You may know Rabbi Max Schreier from Brooklyn. This,
sure,
is one of his sons.
Yep.
There's a man named Rabbi Jason Rappaport who is kind of in charge of administrating and pulling it all together using high tech to organize and to make sure that everything flows in a timely and accurate fashion. We have other people in charge of quality control who review and make sure that everything is accurate. And again, we're looking for accuracy and clarity, and so far, we're doing a great job. This is really something that we're very, very proud of.
Let me ask you a couple of more things before you wrap up. Heading back to some of the folks who are in touch with me, knowing that you'd be with me today, someone points out and would like to know about the unique nature of this effort and its incorporation and reliance on the Talmudic scholarship of women. You have an amazing team, some incredible scholars, and some might find it fascinating that among those scholars we have both men and women. What is your comment about that?
Yes, well, we're trying to use the people who are most expert in this complicated task. And to be expert, you have to have a command of the Talmud, but you also have to have a command of the English language. And with regards to the commentary and notes, you have to have a command of ancient and ancient history, Jewish and otherwise. You have to have a command, or you have to have people who are expert in Greek, in Latin, and in Persian, because there are many Greek, Latin, or Persian terms in the Talmud that require elaboration. And we have linguists, professional academic linguists who work with us. Similarly, in recovering material from the various museums, we need people who are expert in archaeology and in art and ancient coinage, et cetera, et cetera. So for that reason, we have on our staff several, quite a few women who are expert in any of the above areas and who work as translators, in some cases as editors, advisors, adjunct scholars, every step of the way. We have, and the names of all the people involved are listed in each volume. They change from volume to volume, obviously, but we get our experts from the pool of expertise that's out there in the academic world as well as in the traditional Talmudic world.
All right, so not to make too big of a deal, but if there are women listening right now who love to see when other women are able to progress in an area such as this, they should take great pride that, in fact, that is the case.
Yes, indeed.
And in terms of accuracy and clarity, if it wasn't 2013, would it be as doable as this was? We know what computers and technology have done. You could see it. When people buy this Maseches Shkalim, they will see what you were alluding to, that the accuracy, the clarity is just absolutely amazing. I'm sure of Steinsaltz's wishes that he had those same tools available decades ago when he started his work. Tell me how being in this era has helped the accuracy and clarity.
All right. Now, let me just say this. As you know, Nochem, the audience may not know, I grew up in a pre-high-tech age. And for me to really understand, to really answer the question that you're asking, I really need to consult some of my teenage grandchildren because they're much more expert on this than I. But there's no question that this is using high-tech to the max. Both in organizing the flow of the work, the quality of work, and even in the actual translation, the computer helps us translate. For example, I'll try to make it as simple as possible because it gets quite complex. Mm-hmm. But for example, there are certain phrases in the Talmud that appear consistently throughout the Talmud. Ika da'amri, Iboyas Ema, Omar Av Yehuda Omar Rav, etc. Well, once we translate them once into English, the computer picks up that translation. And a year later, 2 years later, 10 tractates later, those phrases are already translated by the computer, and we don't have to redo them.
Wow.
I gave you some simple examples. Rabbi Judah said in the name of Rav. And then that's not going to change in meaning, whether it's the first Masechta, the first tractate of Talmud, or the 15th tractate of Talmud. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav means Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, period. So that's done. But I'm giving you a simple example. But the same thing is true sometimes for entire passages, which repeat themselves two or three, or in one case, five times throughout the Talmud. So that translation is already done. Now, sometimes there are nuances in the different nuances that have to be brought out, but for that, the editors have an ability to override the computer's instructions. But the computer actually gives the translator instructions based upon previous passages which have already been translated. This, besides everything else, this makes the translation consistent throughout all the many, many volumes of the Babylonian Talmud.
So
you're
is
not going to find if you're not going to find a phrase translated one way in Maseches Brachot and a different way in Maseches Bava Kamma because the computer won't let you do that.
Right. They may argue about biblical passages and what they mean, but the computer won't argue about what the Talmudic passages mean.
Now, of course, the computer it helps a lot. It certainly accelerates. Without the computer, we could not produce at the rate that we're producing.
So
eight
the,
volumes in 2 years.
So does it make your does it make meeting deadlines much easier as you go through?
Yeah, it not only makes it easier, it's the only way that it could be done is with the help of the computer. Having said that, you need human beings to make sure that the computer doesn't do some things that computers do. The intelligence of human beings is still trumps the intelligence of a computer, especially when it comes to Talmudic study.
Right. I guess we've heard about the computers that could beat human beings at chess, but I guess we haven't found the computer that could be a better chavrusa than somebody else at this point. Although, who knows? Huh?
Well, the computer is a good chavrusa because you can insult it and it won't take umbrage.
You don't have to worry about any of the personality problems.
That's
huh?
right.
What's happening right now? I mean, you mentioned the order of the Masechtas and trying to keep up with it. So is it obvious then what project you're completely enveloped with right now?
Well, for one thing, I wanted to mention, you said that October 20th begins Shkalim,
right,
and that's out. But on November 10th, just 3 weeks later,
wow,
we begin Yoma, and that's out. That's
wow,
already available in Jewish bookstores and as well as on KorenPod.com. And right behind that is Masechet Sukkah. So we've got everything in the pipeline. I personally, right now, I'm about 2 years down the road, because I'm working on expanding some of the introductory material that Rabbi Steinsaltz wrote for the first tractate in Nezikin for Maseches Bava Kamma.
Wow.
Because we feel that at the opening tractate of a whole new order, we really, need some more comprehensive introductions, and that's what I personally am working on.
And a complicated
right now.
And a complicated order, one that's not very
although
easy.
We find, you know, everything's complicated.
Yeah, I guess anyone who thinks there's such a thing as an easy masechta, you would say otherwise, huh?
Right, that's true. that's very true. Sometimes they're easier because the content is more familiar, but in terms of the subtlety, the philosophy, the complexity, the diversity, there's no difference between the Masechet Brachot, which is supposedly easy, and the Masechet Yevamos, which is definitely difficult.
We should mention that the current Talmud Bavli is available in the standard size, the Daf Yomi size, and the iPad app. I would guess that the digital edition has been very well received. That would be my guess these days. Would you agree, Rabbi Weinberg?
Yeah. Every aspect has been very well received. I just want to point out that the old-fashioned book comes in two versions. It comes in a larger and a smaller size. The smaller size is a Daf Yomi size. It's more portable.
Right.
But the larger size is in full Technicolor, in full color. So it has that advantage over the smaller size, which is for technical reasons, in black and white. And some of the illustrations, frankly, when you see them in full color, it gives a different experience to the actual learning of the text because it becomes alive.
Well, I can attest to that just with Shkolim, how much of my interest was piqued on different topics just because of the incredible color that's utilized. We should also mention that Koren allows one to build their Talmud library with a reference guide to the Talmud that's available, plus the Koren Hebrew Talmud Bavli set, which is available with the classic Vilna page with commentary. And, of course, anybody who's ever seen a Steinsaltz Gemara, they call it the classic Steinsaltz Hebrew Talmud Bavli set, which is available in all its volumes as well. And all that information is available on the web at korenpub.com. Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weinrib is editor-in-chief of the Koren Talmud Bavli Project. Rabbi Weinrib, always a delight to speak with you, and this is unbelievable. This project, I would guess, just takes up all of your time at this point, or at least most of it, because I know you're involved in so many different things. Continued hatzlacha. I don't know how you and the scholars are able to pull this off, but thank God you are on schedule, and thank God you're producing an amazing product for our community.
Thank you. It takes a lot of my time, but not all of it. I have responsibilities, as you know, to the Orthodox Union,
right,
and other projects I'm involved with. Here, really, I rely upon an excellent, outstanding team. I just mentioned a few of the people on it. So I had to exclude mentioning all the names of the very impressive group of scholars, translators, copy editors, word processors, et cetera. It's just a very impressive group of people.
And by the way, Rabbi Weintraub, you may recall when you worked on Kiddus and you released that to the vast Jewish community, I mentioned how you probably had a very down period of time as you were going through the preparation of Kiddus. Thank God, recently, because of the release of Shkolim, you got to dive into the topics that had to do with the existence of the Beis HaMikdash. I'm sure that put a much bigger smile on your face.
Yes, it did. Well, actually, my introduction to Korah and to its publisher, Mr. Matthew Miller, and to the whole staff came because the keynote, the Tisha B'Av keynote, which I translated, was a joint project of OU Press
right.
and Koren.
Right.
And that's first really how I came to the attention of Koren, and they asked me to become involved
and that
in
is
this project, which is a lot happier than mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G.
Oh, yes, we've discussed that in the past. Rabbi Weintraub, always a delight. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and hatzlacha to you.
I appreciate that, and continued good luck and great success with you and Koren. That is Rabbi Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weintraub. He is the editor-in-chief of the Talmud Bavli Project for Koren Publishers. Everybody out there, you have an opportunity to delve into the incredible ocean of the Talmud with Koren Publications. They have so many incredible releases, and we get an opportunity each week to outline some of them. You may recall in recent weeks we had Alex Israel on, Rabbi Alex Israel, I should say, who has the incredible book in the Maggid series of books of Tanakh. And you'll recall, of course, Rabbi Binyamin Lau joined us as well. We had the opportunity to discuss his latest with him, and now Rabbi Weintraub. We recommend you go to the web at korenpub.com, KorenPub.com, for Koren Publishers and everything they have to offer on the topics of Tanakh, prayer, Talmud, Shabbat and holidays, the Maggid Jewish Library that we mentioned, which has its own imprint under Koren and has really an incredible array of works. And now, not only can you go ahead and purchase the individual tractates of Talmud as presented by Koren, the works of Rabbi Steinsaltz in incredible English form, but you can actually subscribe to the entire set as more and more continue to be released, and anything that has been presented, or I should say that has been studied in Daf Hayomi and the one-page-per-day Talmud study up until this point, is already available. So Maseches Shkolim begins, as you heard Rabbi Weintraub say, on the 20th of October. Maseches Yoma will begin right after that at the beginning of November, and all those tractates, plus those that have already been studied in Daf Hayomi in this cycle, are already available. So check it out. Your local Koren bookstore, has all the Koren publications. And, of course, their website is a wonderful resource. And I thank Rabbi Weintraub for joining us here on Buy the Book. This is the Nachum Segal Network. There is a rumor, by the way, if you're listening to this in its original form, which is a Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, there is a rumor that we will have Maseches Shkolim volumes available for our JM and the AM audience coming up later in the week. And we highly recommend you pay careful attention for that, because it is a very valuable volume and something that you will want to have in your collection. That's for sure. So pay careful attention to the Nachum Segal Network, and we will let you know when the Koren Talmud Bavli Maseches Shkolim is going to be available as a giveaway, and you'll be able to call in or write in by email to actually win one of those beautiful volumes. I thank you all very, very much for listening into the Nachum Segal Network. Don't forget there are many, many ways to listen, including the Nachum Segal Network app, including our listen line at 212-419-4241, including archives, including your computer, and of course make sure to tune in each and every week for Buy the Book right here, brought to you by Koren Publishers. It has been a delight to speak with all of you, and a delight to bring you the incredible wisdom and the wonderful work of Dr. Tzvi Hirsch Weintraub and the Talmud Bavli Project of Koren Publishers. Go to korenpub.com, KORENPUB.com. You're listening to Buy the Book. This is the Nachum Segal Network. ¶¶